Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Football Writers Podcast, featuring me, Mike Calvin, Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst, and Richard Amofa of The Athletic. Every day is an adventure in football at the moment. Game-changing issues are being discussed, and no one knows quite where we're heading. One thing we can cling to, however, is the resumption of the Premier League. It won't quite be business as usual because of the lack of crowds. But Saturday's Merseyside derby requires no hype. Liverpool, of course, make the short journey to Goodison across Stanley Park as champions. Everton are in form and in the mood to assert themselves. Now, Aid, can you see them winning local bragging rights?
Well, it's been a while, hasn't it, since Everton did beat their local rivals. But they'll never have a better chance, will they? The bookmakers don't seem to give them a lot of hope. I checked out the odds and Liverpool are still odds on to win this game. You can get a good price on Everton. And for me, that's a surprise because the form book tells you that Everton should at least be the equal of Liverpool in this match. I mean, they're playing fantastically well, have to say, particularly as an attacking force. And when you think about Liverpool and their problems, particularly against Villa with that high line, then you've got Richarlison, who's fantastic at making those runs in behind. We know that James Rodriguez is outstanding at picking out those runs. And Calvert-Lewin, despite being a target man, essentially, is one of the quickest forwards in the Premier League. He's rapid. So they certainly have the tools to hurt Liverpool. For me, the issue they've got is a slight lack of confidence in goal with Jordan Pickford. And I'm still not really sold on the back four, but what they have got is a much better midfield that will provide better protection this season. For me, Everton have made big strides. They'll never get a better chance to beat Liverpool, I don't think.
What about that Villa performance and result, Rich? Do you think there seems to be a consensus that it was a bit of a blip, but since then they've had all that uncertainty about the implications of COVID, Mane, Thiago, Keita, Shaqiri, all having positive tests of various magnitudes. It does seem to be Everton's big chance, but you've got to look at pedigree here, haven't you?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the positive COVID test there, so Mane is back in training, which is a big boost for them. I think Thiago's back now as well. And as I said, both players obviously give that added quality. I think before the international break, they were lacking fluency in their play. Obviously, the Villa game was a big example of that. But I think the break did kind of come at a good time for them. It allowed them to almost regroup, and it probably could work in their favour in terms of stopping that halt and, you know, allowing them to kind of regroup. Whereas Everton, great momentum with four wins on the trot, maybe the international break, you know, could be a negative for them and in terms of halting that good momentum. So it'll be interesting to see how both teams kind of regroup after the players come back. But as Aid said, you know, never a better chance for Everton to get one over their rivals.
There have been a lot of 5-year retrospectives on Jurgen Klopp in the media in the last couple of weeks. Aid, what one quality that he possesses do you think Liverpool need the most this season? You know, the obvious one's man management, but is it deeper than that?
I think it's tactical nous, and he's shown that he's got that, obviously, over the past 5 years. He's modified the Liverpool style year on year and made them a stronger team. So he needs to find something new, something extra. I believe that the acquisition of Thiago Alcantara is probably the guy to take Liverpool to the next level. So yeah, he will need to come up with something new tactically, because teams know what to expect now. And we saw with Villa, they ruthlessly exploited the high line. What happened in that game? Obviously, a lot of things happened in that game. Yeah, but from a tactical point of view, I just felt that the high end of the pitch in midfield and with the forwards to some degree, they didn't shut down the space well enough. They didn't work as hard. And when that 5% goes and suddenly opponents have time to look up or that they can get through the line and pass the press, then you can really hurt Liverpool. And that's what they haven't allowed teams to do that. They've suffocated them with their intensity. So he needs to get the team to be as intense as they were en route to the title. He needs to add a tactical strand. I think Thiago will do that. And you know what? I also think he needs to show his ruthless side. They're title winners. Well done. Brilliant. But that's gone now. Don't rest on your laurels. And if he sees players that aren't giving him that 100%, if he sees players that have dropped 2 or 3%, he needs to take them out and he needs to make one or two statements, I think, with his team selections.
What about in that context then, Richard, Jordan Henderson? His influence seems to have been missed. He had sort of 10 or 12 minutes in England's game last night. Do you see him playing a key role almost as Klopp's lieutenant on the pitch?
100%. I think when he is on the pitch, Liverpool just seem more assured, more calm, both in possession, but also, as you say, the kind of the pressing, that the energy that they have in midfield. You know, Jordan Henderson sets the tone for that. He's the one who sets the standard and demands the rest from his teammates out on the pitch. And I think for Liverpool, it's quite an interesting one, because I think they've always been, it's a different dynamic for them this season, because they've always been chasing Man City. And obviously they were ahead for most of last season, but now they're the team to beat. And that provides a different dynamic. Teams will set up differently against them. And it's a big test of them to kind of overcome that, because it's a completely different challenge being at the top and being the team to beat, as opposed to being the kind of underdog, which almost Liverpool have been over the past few years. So I think that the derby will be a really interesting kind of dynamic to see where they go, really. Because, as you say, are they going to really rise to that challenge, or are they... we're going to see, you know, performances like against Villa, where they almost just kind of fell. You know, it was a bit of a disaster for them, really. So, yeah, I think you know, Henderson, with regards to kind of setting the tone for the kind of standards in the team, his influence is key, 100%.
What about derby matches? They do have a unique intensity, or they usually have it, because obviously it's a different circumstance now, isn't it? There'll be no fans at Goodison Aid, but you know as a player yourself, the atmosphere is already set, won't it? Simply because it's the sort of game that players are reminded of when they're on the streets by the fans, even beforehand, or, you know, when they're doing their shopping on a Thursday.
Wow, how many footballers are on the streets? I don't know. I'm not sure how many Premier League footballers are out there meeting.
Well, they all
people.
Have personal shoppers, do they?
I think they might do. And they might, but yeah, I don't think that they're too many treading the streets of Liverpool at the moment, given the tier three status in the city. So they might be missing that input from the fans this weekend. It's such a shame, isn't it? I mean, think about the next Merseyside derby if fans are allowed back in and it's a full house, or even if it isn't. You know, think of the difference. It's a real shame for the Goodison faithful, because they must be loving this Everton team. They must be. And I would, you know, hazard a guess that the atmosphere would have been one of the best that it's been in many years ahead of this game, given the rising standards under Ancelotti. So, yeah, I think the players are doing pretty well, you know, in general, at getting themselves up for matches behind closed doors. I do feel that the high goal count is partly because it feels like a training game. I know that argument's been floated, and I do see sense in that. But in general, I think the tempo of the games have been very, very high, because it could be extremely sterile. And I don't think we've seen that many sterile matches.
What about the influence of the international break, which you mentioned in passing, you know, a couple of minutes ago, Rich? You've got Calvert-Lewin, can't stop scoring. He's going to come back full of confidence. He's obviously benefited hugely from the influence of Duncan Ferguson. But on the other hand, you've got Jordan Pickford. More high-profile errors, one in the defeat to Denmark. Everton have bought a new goalkeeper. Would you be surprised if Carlo Ancelotti takes him out of the firing line?
I would be, only because if he would have done, I would have expected to see it sooner. I think, you know, he has shown faith in him, but there will become a time where, you know, these mistakes are going to be punished. And, you know, Ancelotti, you know, he's managed at the top levels, managed top players, top goalkeepers, and he's used to managing high-profile squads, and he's been ruthless in his decision-making over the years, hence why he's been so successful. So Pickford will know now that, you know, these errors need to, you know, be cut out of his game. And as you say, new goalkeepers come in to provide competition. So if he doesn't back up his ideas, for sure, maybe in the next couple of games, you might see him out the firing line, almost similar to Kepa, because, you know, as Aid mentioned, their back line and, you know, the goalkeeper, it will hamper them moving forward. I mean, they've got great attacking players going forward, a really solid midfield, and it'll be such a shame to see all that good work go to waste due to sloppy errors at the back.
Yeah, this isn't the game, is it, to change your goalkeeper? I don't think. I think he's in kind of last chance saloon, but I wouldn't be making a big call like that ahead of the derby, Mike.
Yeah, I suppose also if you're looking at that defence, you've got Ben Godfrey has come in, and you know, I was quite impressed with him at Norwich, and I think he, you know, given time and a bit of sort of training on, I think he'll be a very, very good Premier League player. A player that you know well, Aid, Theo Walcott, has left Everton. He's now back at Southampton. One assumes he'll make his debut against Chelsea, won't he?
Yeah, it'd be nice for him, wouldn't it, to do that. Look, I think Theo probably did need that fresh start. He's fallen down the pecking order, and really, if you think about Theo's best position, right side of attack, that's where James is at the moment, and you don't see that, you don't see him being left out too often given his form, do you? So no, it's probably the right move for him, and he's comfortable in the surroundings, and I think he will suit their style. I really do. It's, will he play up top or will he play out wide? I guess he gives Hasenhüttl options. Southampton have got a good record, actually, against Chelsea. They've gone there and picked up some decent results in recent seasons. So, yeah, this is a fascinating match, I think, at the weekend. Because you talk about dodgy defences. I certainly feel that Lampard's back four is a work in progress. So if Theo hits the ground running alongside Ings, who's been fantastic, then they can cause one or two problems there. But yeah, for Theo, it had to happen. Otherwise, this would have been a completely wasted season. And when you get to his age, you just can't sit on the bench for a whole year. You can't have that. So I'm glad for him that they got things sorted.
Yeah. How do you assess his career?
I think he's overachieved, actually. I don't mean that as a massive slight on him. I just don't think he's the most gifted footballer. I think that he was blessed with amazing pace, and he made great use of that as a direct player. Scored a lot of goals down the years, made some big moments. I just think at the outset, he was overhyped. That's not his fault. And then he found his level. And I think he had a lot of good seasons at Arsenal. And he should be proud of his achievements for Arsenal. But yeah, hand on heart, he obviously got a lot of England caps. Hand on heart, I think there have been, you know, dozens, you know, maybe hundreds more talented footballers, all-round footballers than Theo Walcott. But not many were as quick as him, and that's the reason that he had the career he had.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the Chelsea side, Rich, again, we talked about the international dividend or otherwise. I think by common consent, Reece James was probably England's best player against Denmark until he got himself sent off after the final whistle.
What's he doing?
Yeah. You know, you're Frank Lampard, Richard. How do you deal with that? Do you just basically say, well, look, you know, let's chalk this one up to experience? Or, you know, how do you deal with young players?
I think in a situation like that, as you say, young players are full of enthusiasm, full of, you know, intensity, excitement, you know, whatever you want to call it. you know, Lampard will probably sit him down and say, look, you know, there's a standard we need to adhere to. You know, you've crossed the line there, but look, you've played really well. You mentioned that, Mike, you know, he's one of England's better players against Denmark. And, you know, we need to see that form continue into the season. So, you know, keep your temperament in check, because that's really important, you know, especially as you progress. You know, we need to keep, you know, if you're suspended, you can't play and you're a valuable member of the team. So, you know, we need to keep that in check. But, you know, your performance was really positive and we need to see more of that moving forward. So I think he'll be happy with him in terms of his general play. But yeah, definitely maybe a slight ticking off just in terms of his conduct.
Mm. Where do you think, Rich, Reece James stands at the moment in the pecking order at right back? It seems that Gareth Southgate's playing about five right backs every game at the moment. But, you know, and it seems that he has got the manager's confidence over someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold, which I find a bit strange, to be honest.
I agree. You know, we all know what Trent can do, especially going forward. I mean, there are question marks about his defensive play, and we did see him exposed at times against Belgium. And, you know, we know Reece James has got that power on the right-hand side, and he's got great delivery as well. So Southgate probably doesn't... I don't think he knows his best 11, but I think that's another topic for another day. But I think it shouldn't really be a toss-up. I mean, in theory, Trent Alexander-Arnold should be the starting right-back, but, you know, there are question marks about his defensive capabilities. Against the better teams, he does get exposed, as we saw. So, as you say, if James can perform like he did the other night, then it will definitely give Southgate something to think about.
I just don't think Southgate should be sort of, I don't know, seduced by, you know, some good crosses. I mean, he's got Kyle Walker, and he's got Trent Alexander-Arnold, and he's got a number of other right-backs available to him that are significantly better defenders. And I'm not hammering Reece James. I just think that Reece James is not an international quality defender yet. Yeah, so it does surprise me, his use of him. But look, good luck to Reece. He caught the eye in a very sterile match. Wasn't hard to catch the eye, you know, if he did something decent in that performance. But yeah, in general, I have to say that I think there are three, four, maybe five right backs that are more assured in the defensive aspect. And look, in a major tournament, I think you've got to be careful. I think you need guys that know how to defend.
Mm. What about the, you know, the sensitivity of a manager is always emphasised when he's got one of his key players struggling really badly. Now, what are the implications, Aid, for Manchester United and Harry Maguire? He looked lost last night. I was, you know, watching that England game, and I made a note, and this was probably only after about 10 minutes. I was watching Maguire, because he didn't impress me in the previous game.
No.
And he was all over the place. You know, his positional sense was wrong. And I just put one name down, and I put Phil Jones. You know, that there was that almost complete collapse of confidence. Now,
I think that Harry Maguire's head is frazzled at the moment, and for that reason, he should probably be taken out of the firing line. We saw him, he was limping, wasn't he? And it might be the best thing for him to get injured at the moment. It's not great for Manchester United, because I understand that Eric Bailly got injured on international duty as well, which leaves them woefully short, doesn't it, in the centre-back department. It's not as if Victor Lindelof was playing well ahead of the international break. So they're bang in trouble in the centre-half department. But yeah, look, sometimes it can be a sanctuary for players that have got off-field troubles, the pitch. But in Harry's case, it looks like he was taking those troubles onto the field with him. And part of the reason behind that is because Manchester United's defensive form has been just astoundingly bad. So he's got no confidence anyway. He's also got the weight of the world on the shoulders. So look, in an ideal scenario, Harry Maguire sits out the next 3 or 4 weeks, gets his head straight, gets fully fit, gets his confidence back. But I don't know if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has the backups to be able to do that unless Harry's injured.
Yeah, that's the key point, isn't it, Richard? You know, United cannot afford another embarrassment at Newcastle, can they?
No, you say you haven't started the season well enough at all. And, you know, you say the Spurs game, I mean, people look at 6-1, is probably something that was on the cards, really. I mean, you look at the Brighton game the week before when they hit the woodwork five times, you know, something, you know, they just do not look tight at all. Midfield are not pressing well enough. not pressing well enough up front either. So there's issues across the pitch. But as Aid said, with regards to Maguire, I would want to see him taken out of the firing line. But I say, unless he's injured, can't really afford to not have him in the team because of the lack of depth there. I know we've
got to ham up that injury, you know. Rich. He's got to just say, like, it's too sore.
It was sort of right at the top of the hamstring, wasn't it? He was feeling. Yeah. So, you know, you can't take any. He could go out and tear the whole thing, and that's sayonara for a while.
He's not the quickest anyway, is he? So, yeah, hamstrings are a bit of a problem. On the stats, by the way, for Man United, last season, they had a better XG goals against. Basically, they were the second best when it comes to expected goals conceded, behind Manchester City, actually, Manchester United. They're expected to concede one goal a game. I had a little look this week at where they are. They're now officially the worst. They're expected to concede 2.57 goals per game, and that's excluding penalties. So they're in a mess. They're in an absolute mess at the moment. They're worse than West Bromwich Albion in terms of their defensive fragility. So, Newcastle, we talked about Everton having, you know, what better chance to beat Liverpool? Same has to apply for Newcastle in this game at home to real under pressure United.
Yeah, interesting, because Sam Maximin has signed a new contract till 2026. So that's some long-term planning going on there. There's always still a hint of the short-term crisis at United, Rich. There seems to be a drip feed of negative comment about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you know, from the media, hands up, but also, you know, the little snippets are coming out the dressing room, which is always a bad sign. He really does need to pull it round, doesn't he?
Well, I think you're looking at the context of the season, you know, there's managers out there, you know, I know lots of people talk about Pochettino, and the more these results continue, the louder the calls for a new manager will be to come in. I think the issues are is that the same things seem to be happening over and over again. As you say, you look at how porous United were against Palace. Okay, so you think, okay, Brighton, you know, should maybe shore up, but then Brighton are able to penetrate United on various occasions. The same with Spurs. And it just seems as though United are just reliant on individual brilliance and moments of quality from their forward players to get them out of a hole, or obviously penalty kicks from Bruno Fernandes, or, you know, a bit of quality from him. And that's just not going to be enough. It's not going to cut it. I think got away with it in Project Restart after lockdown and, you know, look quite good. But as I say, when you break it down, it was purely moments of individual brilliance that were getting United through games. You look at them structurally, and as I said, the same things keep happening over and over again. And until those things are addressed, we're going to keep seeing these defensive frailties.
Yeah, because when you look at it, you go back to square one, which is basically recruitment. And, you know, the implications of inadequate recruitment. Why let Chris Smalling go at the moment? You know, that didn't seem to add up. And I suppose, you know, you look at, you know, Manchester United, and we've talked about this in the past, almost ad nauseam, their need for a director of football. When you've got someone like Edwin van der Sar, who is perfectly, but I mean perfectly suited to that job, why don't they just go out and get him?
It is bizarre, isn't it, that they haven't filled that post. They've said that they want a director of football, I believe, and just go out and get them. They're, like you say, van der Sar is one of a few former players that could fill that role very, very nicely indeed. I've got to say, I think the next few weeks are going to be a major test of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's coaching and tactical nous, because I think most of us can see where it's going wrong. The fullbacks have been badly isolated. And I think part of that is to do with having strikers essentially playing on the wings. So, you know, he doesn't want those guys tracking back to fullback, which often leaves them isolated 2v1. In midfield, the only way to remedy that is if you've got a really industrious midfield where the midfielders can shift across to lend a hand. And let's face it, they're just using one, aren't they? It's either Matic or McTominay. It's Pogba and Fernandes, and that's not what you want them to be doing. So I just think he needs to look at the structure of the team. You touched on it, Rich, structure. He needs to sort of start again here. Wouldn't surprise me if there's a change of system. Cavani's not available, is he, this weekend? So with Martial suspended, maybe we'll see two up top and a change of shape. They certainly need to do something different, because again, as Richard said, if you keep making the same mistakes, the same thing's going to happen, aren't they? It's daft.
Mm. What about Spurs, Rich? You know, there's obviously been tension between Jose Mourinho and Gareth Southgate over Harry Kane, which is probably unlikely to have been eased because he did the full 90 minutes last night. Where do you see Tottenham at this stage of their development? Is Mourinho going to prove us all wrong?
I think so. I think Tottenham are looking good. I'm liking the look of them this season. I think, you know, the likes of Ndombele in midfield seems to be coming on quite well. Been very impressed with him. And yeah, as you say, that the Kane-Son axis, you know, we saw it's a devastating effect against Southampton and against United as well. And you say Mourinho seems to have got them set up in a way in which, you know, they're looking to hurt teams. I mean, we all saw the documentary where, you know, he wanted them to be, you know, more ruthless in nicer terms. And, you know, I think we are seeing that now. I mean, even with, you know, the Mello incident where Martial got sent off, I think beforehand we wouldn't have really seen that from a Spurs team, that kind of nastiness, that kind of gamesmanship. But I mean, even that, I mean, people may not agree with it, but it does give you that just that added extra, you know, couple of percent, which does take things forward really. And as I say, you've got Bale coming in now. I don't think he will start against West Ham, but again, we all know his quality. I think he will hit the ground running when he does come in eventually. So I think things are looking exciting for them. I'm been impressed with them so far.
What are the realistic expectations of Gareth Bale, Aid?
Well, it's hard to say because we don't know how much he's going to play. Can he stay fit? If Gareth Bale can stay fit, he can be one of the best players in the Premier League. Absolutely no doubt about that. He's an amazing talent. And I still think he's got the ability to score great goals, to influence matches. And when you look at how sharp Kane and Son Heung-min have been, since that sort of Labour performance against Everton, they've been so sharp, chucking Gareth Bale to the mix. And you've got an awesome front line, haven't you? And it hurts me to say that, but that is exciting. So, Gareth Bale, we shouldn't underestimate his capabilities. He is an elite footballer. And and I'm looking forward to seeing him deliver some special moments. I just fear that injuries will hamper his progress.
Yeah. Now, I know you're not a fan, Aid, so I'll ask the question to Richard. your thoughts on David Moyes being back? You know, as I said, I don't think Aid is his number one buddy. But
yeah, look, on that, I've been very critical of Moyes in the past, but credit where it's due, Mike. He is making some really good decisions at West Ham, and they are playing with an aggression that I saw in Moyes' Everton team. I just think that his teams have lacked intensity in recent seasons. He's got that back now. And you know why? I think part of it is he's made some really big decisions. He's left Noble out of the team, which is not easy to do. He's left some star talent, Felipe Anderson. He's let him go. He's sacrificed him. He's got hardworking players that want to buy into what he's asking. And by making those tough calls, he's getting the tune out of his players. So look, yeah, I don't think he's amazing as a manager, but credit where he's due, he's having a very good season so far. So there you go. Floor's clear, Rich.
Wow. Well, I'm going to record that one. I thought that was just fantastic. So Rich, you know, the one thing he does have a dour image, doesn't he? But there was an interview recently where he spoke really well about the loneliness of management and all the associated mental health issues in football. You know, I do think he deserves a bit more credit than Aid did until about 5 minutes ago.
I don't know what's changed, Aid. What's going on? No, I think Aid hit me on the head there. I think, you know, at West Ham, they did have a lot of, you kind of call them luxury players, I guess. And Moyes has almost just said, OK, look, we need to knuckle down because last season they simply weren't good enough and got in players who, you know, provide the energy, that intensity, that can, you know, first of all, make them a bit more solid at the back, but also a bit more sure going forward as well. And, you know, the likes of Antonio up front, who just provides obviously great work rate. Obviously, he's quick and he's strong and he sets the tone and the tempo for the rest of the side. Obviously, you've got Declan Rice providing that industry in midfield as well. And he's really trying to build a team around those kind of players. And it's proven dividends so far. No, it's interesting you touch on the loneliness of management. I know Chris Hughton is back in football, which is great for him. And I know when he was out of a job, he spoke a lot about being almost like that loneliness almost. And, you know, just studying football, going to the library by himself during the day and watching old clips and just trying to improve. But it can be very difficult, especially when things aren't going well.
Yeah, it gets the best of them, doesn't it, Aid?
Yeah, it's a tough job, very tough job, isn't it? I mean, it is so, so difficult. You've got to look after your mental health if you're a manager in work or out of work, and it's just so demanding. I don't think people realise that. Obviously, people realise the pressure, but they don't realise the skill set that a football manager needs to be good. That it's not just about being a good coach or not understanding football. You've got to be a psychologist. You've got to know which buttons to press. You've got to think about every word you speak in front of the players, because footballers, let me tell you, will seize on anything you say that's a little bit questionable, and they will seize on that weakness. So look, I don't think I could be cut out for it. It takes a very, you know, unique type of person to be able to handle the responsibility of managing a Premier League football team, or any football team for that matter.
Manchester City, Rich, they've got Arsenal at home. Interesting that Kevin De Bruyne opted out of Belgium's squad after Wembley. Do you think that was significant? It almost seemed as though he got a quiet word from Pep. Look, you've played six games, minimal pre-season. Why don't you come home and just put your feet up? Do you think those sort of decisions are going to be more likely as the season progresses?
I think so, especially, you know, you've got another international break, which is crazy.
It's in November. 24 days' time.
it's just relentless. And, you know, when you look at Man City's next upcoming games, Arsenal, Porto, West Ham, Marseille, Sheffield United, Olympiacos, and then Liverpool before the international break. I mean, it is a tough, tough schedule. I mean, you would expect Man City to win most of those games, but so you're looking at the intensity that the game's played at, especially the way City like to play. I think we will see more players, you know, as you say, opting out of those international games, especially, you know, the friendlies. I mean, we all know the kind of impact that the travelling has on the body. And as you say, the intensity that the games are played at, especially over the last couple of seasons, we are going to see players getting injured. So there is a need for duty of care. And as I say, I don't think De Bruyne will be the only one. I know Mourinho tried to play a few games to kind of get Kane rested as much as possible, because we know about his injury record also. So it's probably something we will be seeing a lot more moving forward.
Yeah, you know, Thomas Partey's only just being introduced to his new Arsenal colleagues today, isn't he? He's done well with Ghana, 2 assists, and I think he's created about 6 chances in his spell with them recently. I'm going to have to come up with this, Aid, but what will he bring to the party?
plenty, I hope. I mean, he's a high pedigree footballer, no doubt about it. He has all the qualities that Arsenal have lacked, really, in an orthodox central midfielder. He's got power, and the existing guys that aren't as powerful as he is. Obviously very strong, athletic. He's got the tactical intelligence. We know that. He's worked with Simeone defensively. He knows exactly where to position himself. So we know that he will screen that back three or back four better than probably the other guys that have been there. But he's not just that. And this is what's so exciting. He's also very poised in possession. You know, very calm. We saw that against Liverpool in those two legs last season and in La Liga regularly. And also he's got that drive. He's got the ability to surge forward through the heart of the midfield. And Arsenal certainly haven't had that kind of player for a long, long time. So I'm excited to see him. It's obviously a tough start, City away. And he will need an adaptation process. You know, he won't be brilliant straight away, I guess. But yeah, over time, I'm expecting big things from Thomas Partey. He is perfect addition to the Arsenal midfield.
Yeah, what about Eddie Nketiah, Rich? You know, he's broken the England under-21 scoring record this week. Is he worth a start?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Arteta to put him in a starting lineup. I mean, you know, in Nketiah, you've got a player who loves to play on the shoulder. And I love strikers who like scoring goals in the box and getting all kinds of goals. You know, obviously his interplay is decent. He links up the play well, but when the ball's in the box, that's where he comes alive. His finishing is great, and as I mentioned, he scores all kinds of goals: tap ins, headers. You know, we saw his goal against West Ham, where you know it was a nicely taken finish there. Lacazette has started the season well, of course, but again, you look at those misses against Liverpool. You know, these are key moments where you need a striker to be putting the ball away. And Keita has been doing that, as you say, watching him a lot through Arsenal's academy and England youth games as well. And he just brings that new sense of life. You know, that verve. He's quick. And I think he can give City's backline problems. Just the fact he will help stretch the play as well, provide more space for the midfielders to create. And, you know, we saw how Arsenal opened up City in the semi-final last season in the FA Cup, where they played the ball up from the back and they stretched the play up front. And they really sliced City open. And I think Nketiah can be key to that if he's given the opportunity.
Yeah, talking of opportunity, a lot of people saying this morning that Jack Grealish should have had more opportunity for England. Now, he's back to club business, Villa at Leicester. I suppose if there was ever any danger of hype about him, it's been sort of dampened down over the last week, hasn't it, Aid?
Yeah, because we haven't seen him. But yeah, I would join in with the criticism of Gareth Southgate not using him. He had a fabulous game and then was dumped, really, for want of a better expression. It's quite a snub, wasn't it, to put Calvert-Lewin, who's been excellent as a centre forward this season. I know that he can play on the left. We've seen him do that for Everton. But he's got into the England squad as a number nine. For him to put him on the left instead of Grealish would have angered me if I was Jack Grealish. So yeah, I expect him to be determined to really, between now and the next international break, to continue his form. I mean, he's a special talent. He started this season amazingly well. Last season, his stats were off the scale in terms of creativity. So I think he's absolutely deserving of a place in England squad. And I think Gareth Southgate would be crazy to dismiss him, because you need all sorts in football. He's got pace with Rashford and Sancho. Great skill as well with those guys, with Sterling as well. But what he hasn't got too much of is those guys that take up unusual positions and that can carry the ball with real quality inside the opposition half, guys that can draw fouls. And Grealish brings all that to the table. I think you need someone that's got different characteristics in a squad for a tournament. Grealish, if he's fit, he's in my squad. But listening to Gareth, I just don't think he's a fan.
Yeah, and that's the case, isn't it? I think players, you know, go into fashion and out of fashion, don't they? And, you know, sometimes through injury they fade away. And in that context, Rich, I just want like you to please just dwell a little bit on Nathaniel Clyne. He signed a short-term contract at Palace, who've got their derby against Brighton at the weekend. One, he strikes me as a good man, but secondly, he hasn't had good breaks, has he?
No, he's been really unlucky with his injuries, because, you know, when he was signed by Liverpool, we thought, OK, this is a great step up for him. You know, he proved his quality at Southampton. So I think Palace will be a good situation for him. I think, you know, we know about his quality, obviously defensively first and foremost. And, you know, we know how Palace need that. But also going forward as well, he will provide, you know, another attacking dimension on that right flank. And going forward, I mean, I know the Chelsea game, they weren't great, but you know, they do have exciting players. So to be backed up at fullback with the likes of Clyne, you know, making those overlapping runs will help take Palace's game to another level. You just hope that he stays fit and maintains his consistency, really.
Yeah, certainly do. Two matches this weekend. I'm going to be really unkind here. They're probably the first relegation six-pointers of the season. You've got Sheffield United, Fulham and West Brom, Burnley. Let's look at the Sheffield United and Fulham, if we could, initially, Aid. Are United better placed in terms of their squad and management to just pull themselves around a bit?
Yeah, definitely. I don't see them falling off a cliff. I know it's been a really difficult start to the season, but just look at the nature of their defeats. They've been really narrow. It's been fine margins, really, with them. They battered Leeds at times. Meslier was a man of the match for them in that game. So now I expect Sheffield United to beat Fulham. and to get their season up and running this weekend. There are issues defensively. Obviously, they've lost O'Connell, which is big, the left side centre half. They've lost the keeper, so that's a big change. Henderson is probably better than Ramsdale. So there are one or two issues there. But look, they've signed Rhian Brewster, haven't they, for, was it £23 million?
I mean, that is, yeah, it was a club record, yeah.
That is a gamble, really, for a club like Sheffield United. They've obviously got a lot of faith in him. I like what I see with Brewster, but we don't know, do we, yet, how he's going to take to Premier League football. But I'm excited to see what he can bring. No, I think Sheffield United won't be in a relegation battle. I don't think Burnley will either, even though both will probably be lower than last season. Yeah, for me, Fulham and West Brom, unfortunately, the writing's on the wall already for those guys.
Yeah, West Brom, it looks like they are going to pay £15 million for Carlin Grant from Huddersfield. Good player. Whether he's worth 15, I would probably say no. I suppose for clubs like Albion, Rich, it's the difficult thing, and Fulham to a degree as well, is the ability to break out of that yo-yo cycle. You know, just a bit too good for the Championship, but not quite good enough for the Premier League.
Yeah, I think the issue that West Brom have and have had is when they do get promoted, it's really strengthening in those key areas. It's almost like, okay, it's great, you know, showing faith in, you know, the team that did get them promoted. But as we all know, the Premier League is a completely, you know, different challenge, different animal. And if they don't add in that quality, especially defensively, they will get found out. We saw in the Chelsea game that they can provide a threat. They have got exciting players, you know, the likes of Romain Sawyer in midfield, and obviously Callum Robinson up front is a handful. But as you say, defensively, probably a bit below the standard that we're kind of looking for at the top level. And I think that's been the issue. Championship level, great to see, but when they make the step up, it's been difficult, and I think it'll be a long season for them.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much movement we get before the window closes at 5 p.m. on Friday. And in that context, Abe, we need to look at Project Picture, which was rejected by the Premier League clubs. There's going to be some sort of strategy review involving all 20. Bailout also for the lower league clubs on the horizon. What needs to happen, both immediately but also in the short to medium term, i.e. by Christmas, because this isn't going to go away, is it?
It's not going to go away, no. I mean, this welcome news that they've come together to provide funds to help out the League One and League Two clubs, especially in the context of them losing loads of money themselves. So I'm pleased that they've done that. I mean, they had to. I mean, the PR out of Project Big Picture was just shocking, wasn't it? It was so greedy, so opportunistic from those involved, that, you know, in this, especially in this awful period, for them to be sort of seen as vultures looking to swoop and take power in return for saving the EFL just was such a bad look. So I would like to see them go a little bit further. I mean, the Championship clubs have been left out here, and I think that the Championship clubs are in dire need of assistance as well. I mean, there are so many things that need to happen, Mike, over a period of time. There were good ideas in the big picture, big good ideas in the distribution of cash, and the help for the EFL and to get their houses in order. There was a lot of good ideas there, but it can't come at the expense of handing power to billionaire owners that will have too much self-interest. So look, for now, it's a start. It's welcome news that the PFA are helping to fund the COVID test. Finally, well done to them. I would still call on the government to step in here. And I know that they're saying football's awash with money and that it's a bad look for them to give taxpayers money to football. But I'm telling you now that I'm not convinced that what's been offered is going to be enough to save a few of these teams.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen, Rich?
I'm the same boat as Aid, really. I think, obviously, it's been great that, you know, support has been given to the League One and League Two sides. I would like to see Championship support being given as well. Purely as well, I mean, just for the reasons I was speaking about previously, you know, in terms of with West Brom, for example, as an example coming up, you know, having the resources to to compete at the top level. Should the team get promoted, they don't have those resources in place, it'll be really difficult for them. And also as well, just a kind of day-to-day running of clubs. I think, you know, a lot of people forecasting that a few clubs may fall into difficulty after Christmas. And you just have to look at the wider impact of that, not just on club, but on, you know, the wider businesses around the football clubs as well, who kind of need that kind of revenue, especially on match days. So I think the future is difficult to tell, because I think they're still keen to, things like scrapping the League Cup and the Community Shield. But again, it's all really geared to helping out the teams at the top of the tree. And as you mentioned, Mike, you know, given those subsidies in return for power isn't really a good look. And it sets a dangerous precedent as well.
Yeah. Can I just add, by the way, in the short term, what also needs to be done is that this pay-per-view figure needs to be lowered. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's way too high. And bring in the FSA, the Football Supporters Association, representatives of clubs, they need to be spoken to as a matter of urgency to get their side of this, because I think their input is going to be very, very important moving forward.
Seems like a no-brainer, that, doesn't it, really? I mean, you need to have the fans' voice at the top table as well, because ultimately they're the ones who are going to be paying the money, as you mentioned, for this pay-per-view stuff. And just moving forward as well, to not have fan representation at these kind of level of meetings seems a bit of a scandal, really.
Yeah. It's such a huge issue, and it's something I'm going to return to right at the end of the show. But putting stuff together, Aid, what's your thought for the day?
It's left-footers and the lack of. I mean, we've just seen two England games in a row with no left-footers in the starting 11. And it just drives me bonkers, really, that, first of all, that Gareth Southgate couldn't see that was an issue. He was happy to go and do it again just a few days later. The flow of the team is going to be effective. I know we beat Belgium, but it wasn't a good performance. And it was worse against Denmark. You need balance in a football team. And having left footers is crucial to that. You can move the ball so much quicker and smoother. And I would take it back to the coaches and the way that we coach in this country. Kids are being taken under clubs' wings at 7, 8 years of age, aren't they? There is long enough, surely, for them to work on becoming two-footed players. I find it just a scandal, really, that so few players at the very highest level are comfortable using both feet. And I think that it should be a prerequisite for coaches, youth coaches in particular. It should be at the top of the curriculum. Work on making these kids comfortable with both feet, because I can't for the life of me work out why that's not happening. They've got time. I mean, one thing they've got is time to work with these players. And it feels to me as if that's been, you know, criminally neglected.
Well, I needed help on both feet, to be perfectly honest, but there we go. Richard, what do you want to get off your chest?
We touched on it earlier, just about the kind of mental health within the footballing space, really. I know you spoke about Moyes earlier, and I know a lot of talk has been on Harry Maguire, especially after his red card yesterday, and him having a kind of weight of the world on his shoulders. And I would just like to see that becoming a more consistent theme. I know, obviously, footballers are paid a lot of money, and people would say that they should be able to deal with these things. And obviously, there is, you know, that element of resilience that is attached to it. But as you say, there is a duty of care to these players that we need to look at. And I'm just pleased that it's now becoming a kind of, you know, is more, we seem to be more comfortable talking about, you know, these things and looking into, like, almost, you know, players' welfare. And you just want to see it applied more consistently, really. You know, I mentioned, I think, previously, the likes of Lingard, for example. He has been through a lot, but, you know, these things were almost not ignored, but he was a source of ridicule for a lot of fans and you know, some colleagues alike, even. So, you know, you just have to kind of look at a bigger picture. As you say, we know these players are resilient, and, you know, they've got the temperament to battle adversity and get through it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be where they are now. But it's good to see, at least, that it's coming into the conversation, and, you know, long may it continue.
Yeah, very true, very true. Well, for me, it's farewell project big picture. it's not been very nice knowing you. Kudos to the Premier League clubs who forced Liverpool and Manchester United to back down. There's still a lot of defiant talk from the top two, or more specifically, their apologists. Now, they will come again. You know, that's football real politics. They'll come back with refined ideas to still increase their power. Now, how about going the other way? Call their bluff. Dare them to form a Super League. Present their players with the prospect of not playing for their countries due to FA and FIFA sanction. Now, the pyramid could still work. 14 Premier League clubs plus 72 would work easily. How about a pyramid? 20 in the Premier League, 20 in the Championship, 22 in League One, 24 in League Two. I think that'd work. What are your ideas? Please let me know. And in the meantime, thanks to Richard and Adrian, and to you for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.